Reflection 2. Ancestral Wisdom. While plant-fungal symbiosis can sound metaphorical, it is far more than a figure of speech. Ecosystems literally coordinate shared resources through feedback loops and reciprocity. Recognizing that human communities mirror these same patterns can be an empowering perspective rather than a mere analogy. We too can pool resources when we understand that, in living systems, mutual support is the foundation of resilience. After learning from the Kamba people of Kitui, Kenya, as mentioned in the introduction, I found similar resilient communities in rural villages where I settled and lived along the coast of Kenya. I found nodes of cultural resilience called Kaya among the Mijikenda people, who have maintained a keen understanding of the abundance in nature as well as their role in reciprocity to nature and each other. Let me tell you a story inspired by tales of Mara the storyteller and Mwakalu Chiti, an elder of the Duruma people. The Magic Calabash Story. Long ago, in a village nestled in a forest, a beloved elder held a sacred gourd called a calabash. Anyone in the community could take turns envisioning what they wanted, such as grains or tools, and it would magically appear in the calabash. But for the magic to work properly, they also had to put things back in, like their surplus each season. So much had been placed in the calabash over the generations that some people doubted the need to add anything back in. One day, two men who doubted the tradition crept into the elder's hut and stole the calabash. They fled to a cave and began greedily pulling all kinds of grains, precious herbs, gems, tools, and weapons from the calabash until it started to crack. The two men were so excited as they pulled more and more from the calabash that they didn't notice the crack, and eventually the calabash broke in half, trapping the men under a massive flood of everything that had ever been placed into it. The next day, the elders and the rest of the community found that the calabash was missing. They were upset because it was the basis for how they shared resources and cared for one another. After searching all over for it, they eventually saw the cave. Rotting grains and broken tools spilled from the opening. When they dug through the pile, they found the two men dead and the calabash in two pieces between them. The community quickly went about repairing the calabash. They tried to sew it back together, but when they reached in, no wealth could be pulled out. The magic was broken. Remembering the tradition, they put in their excess grains, but that wasn't enough to heal the damage. They began to put in their excess building tools, but that wasn't enough either. The wise elder remembered that the calabash had a creation story told to him by his grandfather. In the beginning, it had been empty. Seven generations earlier, the community's great-grandmothers had filled it with their tears and first oaths. So the adults of each family made solemn oaths under the baobab tree. These oaths were their deepest promises, their commitments to add their services, their tools, and even their excess harvests for the benefit of the next seven generations to the calabash. Each person shed a tear as they spoke their oaths into the calabash for all to hear and witness. Only then was the magic restored and the calabash came back together. Let's imagine a common resource pool like the calabash. Think of it as a physical seed bank to start with. We can immediately flag some dangerous situations for the long-term survival of that seed bank. We might worry that, like in the calabash story, someone would take too many seeds and not return them. Such dangers often compel us to place limits on access and enclose the commons. While natural ecosystems have evolved and balanced their limits over millions of years in biological networks, the amount plants extract from the mycorrhizal network is limited by their biology. Ours is not. We humans can potentially make rash decisions on timeframes that fungal systems might take generations or evolutionary timescales to make. The time in which plants return nutrients to a particular network is limited by their biology. Again, ours is not, on the scale of our lifetimes. We could choose to walk away and never give any seeds back to the seed bank. We could even burn the seed bank to the ground. What this means is that while millions of years of evolution have created the timings and limits in nature, in human systems we operate in different dimensions of emotions, reputation, memory, cultural norms, and rules. We have social infrastructure that plays the role of the magic calabash and mycorrhizal fungi and biological limiters, but on much faster timescales. This enables us to be dynamic and adaptive, but it also means we can get out of balance and break systems much more quickly. Returning to the example of the community seed bank, if everyone in the community is able to keep track of what was put into the bank and enforce a rule that they can pull out a set amount and then are not able to pull out seeds again until they have returned twice that number of seeds to the bank, the system can find balance and continue. These rules may be too rigid and need modification. Leeway could be given to those families that have fallen on hard times, and so on. When we examine the communities around us, the ancient rules for these systems are not black and white, but leave room for many kinds of situations, forgiveness, and other forms of repayment. We can look at simple social norms, rules, and protocols here. What systems need to be in place for such rules to really work? Let's look next at how fair access to a commons is practiced. In practice, the Duruma are part of a society of 9 tribes called the Mijikenda people, who live along the coastal region of Kenya. All 9 of these tribes, and many others across Kenya, hold to heart a proverb, Mwake mla kuwa mtumwa, which directly translates to, those who leave their traditions become slaves. It can be interpreted to mean, those who lose the abundance of their common resources become dependent on those who would exploit them. When living among these people on the coast of Kenya, I've been able to witness and take part in ancient practices that go back much further than written history. These traditions seem to stem from a very long time ago, possibly before we had language to describe them. We can only get an inkling of where they come from based on the creation stories of the Mijikenda, but in some ways they seem to predate even these stories. The Mijikenda origin story is one of fleeing oppression. They migrated to the coastal area of what is today called Kenya, from an area near what is today called Somalia. The ancestors of the Mijikenda people fled from a war and found refuge among the Wata, the bush people. The Wata are a nomadic people who once lived in the forests among the elephant herds, inhabiting the coastal forests and the Taru Desert. The Wata, who had themselves migrated to the coastal regions of what is now called Kenya, long before the arrival of the Mijikenda, welcomed them to their forests and kaya. The Wata showed the Mijikenda how to create safe homes, or kaya, in the forested hills, and how to live among the sacred forests. According to elders, the primary means of self-identification among the Mijikenda is by kaya. A person is not asked about who they are, but to which kaya they belong. Similar to the term oikos in ancient Greek, the term kaya refers to many things in Bantu languages. It means home, society, village, all their resources, clan, and sacred forest. Each kaya would have an outer defensible border and sacred forest in the middle where a sacred intention-holding object called a fingo would be buried. Note that each clan group and each home was also considered a kaya. The kaya can be seen as a society, and a living system. Mijikenda societies were not kingdoms or states, but rather inclusive groups based on common descent. This way of living in harmony is remembered among Mijikenda elders, people who, still to this day, have protected these sacred forests and the remnants of this ancient social system. Now, I will tell you an ancient creation story from the Wata of Savugalana that makes it clear that living in reciprocity defined their identity. Famine was in the land, and a Wata hunter always came home empty-handed. So his wife decided to take the situation in hand. She and her child started eating grass and leaves and anointing themselves with red earth. They did so every day until they became a mother elephant and her calf. Thus, elephants were born, and the Wata, living in reciprocity with them, have never experienced famine again. The Wata understood that the elephants were not merely a source of food. They were their ancestors and part of their community. What they took from the elephants, they were keen to return. They brought this reciprocity into their dealings with all people. The Wata people could, at any time, go to a Mijikenda home and obtain sheep, goats, arrows, and wire with no payment. Sometime later, the Wata would infallibly reciprocate by giving the family ivory and meat from the elephants they lived among. This form of long-term reciprocity is similar to the resource coordination systems we see in natural systems. The heart of the Kaya. From these beginnings of the Kaya economy, resource coordination appears to have revolved around two core practices that we can term the heart and the mind of the Kaya. We will discuss the heart practice in this section and come back to the mind as an extension of the heart later in the guide. It is important to note that these practices are often not mentioned as part of the Mijikenda religions or faith-based practices. They seem to predate these by some time. To talk about these practices with people in villages often feels to me like I'm asking them how they brush their teeth using tree branches. Such a common daily practice that it is second nature. Not only that, but the pursuit of money has far overshadowed these practices, so that they are often trivialized. The heart practice is called Mweria among the Mijikenda. The similarity between this word and the Mwethia used among the Kamba is not a coincidence, but is due to their common heritage from the Bantu language group, which extends from Kenya all the way to South Africa. As our heart pumps blood through our bodies, this practice pumps and distributes resources across and through the Kaya. It feeds the body of the Kaya, bringing goods and services wherever and whenever they need to go. If we view the Kaya as a body, the Mweria operates like an organ. What is different from both human hearts and mycorrhizal fungal networks is that the Mweria, as a social organ, has no recognizable physical form. It exists in the space of memory, emotion, and reputation. Nobel Prize-winning economist Eleanor Rostrum would have called this resource coordination system part of an intangible commons. The most general term for a group doing Mweria-like practices across the planet is a rotating labor association, or ROLA. You will find something similar in all human cultures. Each such practice has its own name, although some have been lost. Finding them is a bit like finding a magic calabash. In the appendix, you will find a short list of local names that spans many countries and cultures on the planet. In many cases, these ancient practices came to be banned, or replaced during colonization with monetary versions like rotating savings and credit associations, ROSCA. How does a Mweria work? As with the magic calabash story, the Mweria of the Mijikenda people may have started with a promise as a seed of future reciprocity. From my experience in witnessing these Mueria practices come back to life in over 100 communities, the process goes as follows. An elder of the community, often representing a strong family, makes it clear that they are willing to offer some resources or services to others. This offer is the seed of a commons. Another family accepts this commitment and calls a Mueria, which they do by beating a horn with a stick or simply calling out for their neighbours to hear. Upon hearing the call of the Mueria, those who are inspired by the initial offering and willing to offer their support come to fulfil their commitment and help a family build a new roof, farm, granary, and so on. The family that has received support is then expected to help the others in return. If the family fails to reciprocate, perhaps because some tragedy befalls it, that is a risk run by those who have participated in the Mueria. If there is enough abundance in the initial resources, more than enough surplus labour and grains, say, then the community can simply be patient and wait for reciprocity, and in the worst case, they can deal with the loss. If the loss is recoverable, the community may start to articulate and impose rules for reciprocity. For example, that family getting help with their new roof should help other families within a certain amount of time before the rains. There is often a clear rotation of whose turn it is to call a Mueria until a full cycle has elapsed and everyone in the community has received help. This can sometimes take a whole season. Even with no explicit rules, you can imagine a situation naturally forming in which those families that do reciprocate gradually form a thriving living system, and those that don't reciprocate eventually either lose access to the commons, or simply put, no one comes to help them anymore, or make amends. I have seen people, initially outcast from such groups, who were able to make up their debt to the community in many ways, even by asking forgiveness. I have also witnessed people who have been cast out of the commons of the group join or create another Mueria group themselves. There is a similar process of ecosystem regeneration when a tree falls in the forest. Some nutrients are made available, say the rich soil and minerals in the gap left by the fallen tree, and plants start to sprout up thanks to their new access to those seed resources. Pioneer species begin to establish a habitat that the next generation of plants can thrive in, and the process continues until a whole set of species, at different heights or strata, seals off the canopy again. From the beginning of a Mueria, there is some initial abundance, a commitment of resources offered, which I will refer to as a seed of the commons. The role of seeding is incredibly important. The more valuable and reliable the seed, the better. A strong commitment of 10 days of labour, made by trusted elders and witnessed by neighbours, is stronger than an offer mentioned in passing by a teenager. If that commons is expected to continue, i.e., if there is a desire for continuity, then when those initial resource commitments are accepted and used, meaning that some of the seed has been removed, there is an expectation that the resources will be returned to the commons over time. This expectation can be formalised in many ways, as a verbal suggestion, a promise, or an oath. We can think of this expectation in natural systems as unspoken symbiosis. Let us imagine that the people taking part in the Mueria are holding a magic calabash in their collective memories, which we can call a common pool of commitments, or simply a pool. Once the seed is there in the pool as an initial commitment to provide resources, labour, support, materials, etc., chosen community members are given access to those resources, and in return they place their own commitments to provide resources into the pool of collective memory. As people receive help, the commitments that seeded the pool are removed. They have been fulfilled, and no one holds a debt or obligation anymore. At some point within a cycle, the people who have received help will return the favor in goods or services to others in the community. For example, each family may call a mwaria during the harvest season to call on the community, or the commons, for support. The family can get 20 to 30 people to help them harvest their crops and build a granary in a day, whereas without their support, it would take weeks. Those whose turn it is can be determined by who is ready, having prepared themselves to receive support or offer support, or by lottery, a random choice if there are conflicts. Also note that those in debt to the community due to missing a mwaria can make it up outside of the group's rotation by helping their fellow members. This means that the system can look synchronous with a group of neighbours going together to support each member's home, or asynchronous, where individuals help each other throughout the cycle. Shared access to large-scale resources creates a multiplier effect through efficiency, while also providing opportunities for stewardship, belonging, care, skill sharing, collective purpose, infrastructure, credit clearing, and more. All the seeds of a healthy living environment. Before colonization, 3 days out of four were traditionally spent on mwaria for as long as people can remember. And in most communities we work with, it only truly stopped within the last generation. Grassroots Economics Foundation has worked with over 100 communities across Kenya, and the communities reviving and practicing mwaria, or rotating labour associations in general, are simply more resilient and happier than those that don't. Shared reflections. Identify resources. Start by identifying the resources in your own community. Think about the skills, materials, knowledge, spaces, and natural resources available to you. Think of these resources as valuable services and draw a map that visualizes these resources and how they interact. We will revisit this in part two, in the exercise on resource mapping. Observe existing interactions. Take note of how these resources are already connected. Who in your community already shares skills, tools, or knowledge? Where do you see natural groupings, synergies, and alignments between resources? Think of resources as the ingredients of recipes that produce something you love.